You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. This is a reading of the cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Genesis, The Secrets of Creation. This is Lecture 3, given on the 19th of August, 1910, entitled The 7 Days of Creation. Yesterday we painted a picture of the moments indicated by those meaningful words of the Bible, quote, "And God said, let there be light, and there was light," close quote. They allude to an event which portrays the recapitulation at a higher level of earlier evolutionary stages of our Earth's development. I have to go on using the illustration of a human being who, on awakening, calls up from the depths of his soul a certain soul content. It is in some such way that what had slowly and gradually been built up during the course of the Saturn, Sun, and Moon evolutions springs to life again in the soul of the Elohim in a new, modified form. In fact, all that is narrated in the Bible about the 6 or 7, in quotes, days of creation is a reawakening of previous conditions, not in the same form, but in one that was quite new. The next question we are permitted to ask is this: what kind of reality altogether are we to attribute to the account of what happened in the course of the 6 or 7 days? It will be clearer if we put the question this way: could an ordinary eye, EYE, in fact, could any of our sense organs, such as we have today, have made rational sense of what we are told about the 6 days of creation? No, they could not. For the events being described there took place largely in the sphere we can call the realm of the elements, and a certain degree of clairvoyant perception would have been needed to observe them. The truth is that the Bible is telling us of the coming forth of sense existence out of the realms of the supersensible, and that the events of greatest significance are supersensible events, even if they are only one stage above our ordinary physical events which have proceeded from them. So in a certain respect, where all our descriptions of the 6 days of creation are concerned, we are in the domain of clairvoyant perception. What had existed at an earlier time now came forth in etheric or elemental form. We must get a firm grasp of this, otherwise we shall be all at sea regarding what the monumental words of Genesis really mean. So what we must expect to see is all that had evolved by stages during the Saturn, Sun, and Moon evolutions emerging in a new form. Let us begin then by asking what the conditions were actually like, which pertained during the evolutions of these three planetary forms. On Saturn, as you can read up in my title outline of Esoteric Science, everything was in a kind of mineral condition. That which was there in the way of first rudiments of the human being, in fact the entire mass of ancient Saturn, was in a kind of mineral condition. However, this must not make you think of today's mineral form, for Saturn did not as yet have anything of the watery or solid elements in it. It was nothing but interweaving warmth. But the laws prevailing in this warmth planet, which brought differentiation about and brought order into the movement of the warmth, were the very same laws which govern the solid mineral kingdom. So when we say that both ancient Saturn and the human being were in a mineral condition, we must be aware that it was not like today's mineral condition with its solid forms, but a state of weaving warmth governed by mineral laws. Then came the sun condition. We must think here of there still being no separation of the part which later became the earth. What today has become sun and earth was still in the form of one unified body, a single cosmic body. In contrast to the earlier Saturn condition, a coarsening took place, and a gaseous element arose. So that, apart from the interweaving warmth, we now have air streams intermingling and coming together in accordance with their own laws. But at the same time we have a new formation above it, a kind of rarefaction of warmth in the direction of light, a radiating of light into cosmic space. The actual nature of our planetary evolution progressed during the sun period to the stage of the plant. Again, we must not imagine that there were plants in their present form on Old Sun. It is only that the same laws were at work there, in the elements of warmth and air, as rule in the plant kingdom today, those laws which determine that the root shall grow downward and the blossom upward. Obviously, no solid plant forms could arise. We must think of the forces which send blossoms up and roots down, weaving in an air-like structure, and imagine the condition on ancient sun as a light-like flashing forth of blossoms in an upward direction. Picture a gaseous sphere, and within it living, weaving light, which causes the gaseous vapor to shoot up in radiant blossoms, while at the same time, below, there is the effort to check these luminous outbursts and get the old sun to hold together at its center. Then you have a picture of the inner weaving of light, warmth, and air in the ancient sun condition. The laws of the mineral kingdom are repeated, and the laws of the plant kingdom are added, and the development of the human being as far as it has progressed is still only in a plant-like condition. Where today would we find anything in the least comparable to this plant-like weaving in the air, warmth, light sphere of the sun? With today's sense organs, we would search the whole of cosmic space in vain. At a certain period of sun evolution, these conditions existed even physically, that is, as far as the density of air. Today they cannot exist physically at all. The form of activity which actually existed physically at that time can only be found today by directing the faculty of clairvoyant perception toward the region of the supersensible world where the archetypal beings are who belong to our materially physical plants, the entities whom we have come to know as the group souls of the plants. We know, of course, that behind the flora presenting itself to our physical senses, there is something we call group souls. Nowadays, they can only be found in spiritual realms by clairvoyant consciousness. These group souls of the plants are not present in the single plants, such as we see, growing out of the soil. But there is a group soul, more or less, for each species of plant, such as the rose, the violet, the oak, and so on. In the spiritual realm there is not a spiritual being corresponding to each single plant, but we have to think of group souls for the various species. To the poverty-stricken, abstract thinking of today, plant species are just abstract concepts. They were already so in the Middle Ages. And it was because even at that time people no longer knew of the living spiritual activity that is the foundation of the physical world, that the famous controversy arose between realism and nominalism, the dispute as to whether species were mere names or real spiritual entities. For clairvoyant consciousness, this whole dispute is utter nonsense, for when it directs its attention to the plant covering of our earth, it pierces through the external plant forms into a spiritual region where the group souls of the plants actually live as real beings. And these group souls are one and the same as what we call species. At the time when the air, warmth, light sphere of the sun was at its full splendor, when the light playing on the surface of the air threw off the sparkling blossoms of the plants, these forms were the same, in the form of physical air, as the plant species which are only to be found today in spiritual realms. Let us keep firmly in mind that the plant types, in quotes, which cover our earth today in the form of leafing and blossoming plants, trees and bushes, pervaded the ancient sun actually as group souls, as species. At this point in evolution, the human being had come so far that he was also in a plant-like condition. He was unable to awaken mental images within himself, to bring into a condition of consciousness what went on around him, any more than today the plants can do so. The human being was himself in a plant-like condition, and his bodily form existed among those light forms in continuous up and down movement in the gaseous globe. The emergence in the cosmos of even the most primitive form of consciousness requires something very special. As long as our earth forces were still united with the sun forces, as long, roughly speaking, as the sun did not shine onto planet Earth from outside, what we call consciousness could not come into being as part of the nature of Earth. Nor could an astral body, which is the basis of consciousness, enter into the physical and etheric body. For consciousness to arise, a separation, a split, had to happen. Something had to split off from the sun. This is what happened during the third stage of our Earth's evolution, during the ancient moon epoch. When the sun evolution had come to an end and had passed through a kind of cosmic night, the whole structure appeared again. But now it had become sufficiently mature to appear as a duality. Everything of a sun nature split off as one cosmic body, and separate from the sun was the old moon, upon which, now, there were only the elements of water, air, and warmth. The old moon was the earth of those times, and it was only because the beings living on it could receive the force of the sun from outside that they were able to take into themselves astral bodies and develop consciousness, that is, reflect in inner experience what went on around them. Animal nature, therefore, a state of being that is inwardly alive and possesses consciousness, is dependent for its existence on a separation occurring between the life of the sun and the life of the earth. It was during the ancient moon period that animal nature arose, and the human being, in regard to his bodily nature, had developed as far as the animal stage. There is more about this in my book titled Outline of Esoteric Science. So we see that the three conditions that preceded our earth and are the preconditions for its development are linked together by certain laws. On the moon, a fluid element was added to the gaseous element, a watery element on the one hand and sound on the other, a quality of sound, as I told you yesterday, which is a rarefaction of light. This is a rough description of evolution. What had taken place during those three conditions now re-emerged as the memory of the Elohim. At first, as we saw yesterday, in a state of confusion, described in the Bible as Tohu wa Bohu. The stream of forces which raid from the center to the periphery and from the periphery back again to the center embraced at first the interactivity of all three elemental conditions, air, warmth, and water. These were now undifferentiated, whereas previously the gaseous and the warmth elements on the old sun and the three forms, warmth, gas, and water, on the old moon, had been differentiated. Now, during the Tohu wa Bohu, they were in motley confusion, flowing in and out of one another, so that in the early stages of earth development it was impossible to distinguish between water, air, and warmth. They were all mixed together. The first thing that happened next was that light burst into this confusion. And out of this soul's spiritual activity, which I have described as cosmic thinking, there arose a force which first of all separated the air of former times from the water of former times. I want to ask you to fix very clearly in your minds this moment following the coming of the light. If we were to put it into dry prose, we would say, after the light had burst into the tohu wa bohu, the Elohim divided the former air from the former water, so that it was possible to distinguish again between them. In the chaotic mass, made up of all three elemental states, a separation came about into two distinct parts, one of which was of the nature of air, with the inclination to spread in all directions, and the other was of the nature of water, with the inclination to cohere and to draw together. But the two conditions were not at that time comparable to the air or water of today. The water was very much thicker, and we shall soon see why. On the other hand, to get an idea of the constitution of the, in quotes, air of that time, we cannot find a better comparison than if we look away from the earth and watch up in the air, the watery element forming steamy vapor with a tendency to rise up in cloud form, which falls again as rain. That is, it has an inclination to rise and an inclination to descend. Both belong to water, only the one aspect of water has the tendency to vaporize and to rise upward as clouds, and the other the tendency to pour down and assume a level surface. This is, of course, only a comparison, for what I am describing was occurring in an elemental condition. If we want to characterize what happened further, we have to say that the Elohim, through their cosmic thinking, brought it about that a separation took place in the tohu wabohu between two elemental conditions. The one had the tendency to press upward, to become vapor, that is, water transforming itself into air, whereas the other had the tendency to pour forth in a downward direction, that is, water becoming thicker and thicker as it coheres. These are the actual facts which are expressed in modern languages by saying, for instance, quote, "The gods did something between the waters above and the waters below," close quote. I have just described to you what the gods did. Within the, in quotes, waters, they brought it about that one element of it had the tendency to rise, and the other the tendency to reach the center. The something in between is not a description of anything tangible. It is just a way of saying that a separation has been brought about between the two forms of energy which I have just described. If you want a physical example, you could say that the Elohim so acted on the waters that on the one side they rose up and had a tendency to form clouds and to spread out in space, and on the other side they had a tendency to accumulate upon the surface of the earth. In fact, the separating was more in the realm of thought, and therefore the word in Genesis which expresses the separation must be so understood. The English authorized version of the Bible uses the word firmament for this. The Hebrew word is rakia, R-A-K-I-A. This word certainly does not mean anything which one can express in a physically material sense, but simply means the separating out of two directions of force. This brings us to what is described in Genesis as the second day. So, if we wanted to translate it into our own language, we should have to say that in the turbulence of the elements, the Elohim first divided the air from the water. This is quite an exact rendering of what is meant. The Elohim divided what strove upward, which of course includes a mixture of air and water, from what strove to contract into greater density. This is the second day of creation. Now we proceed to the next day. What happens now? What has been sent forth and is spreading outward and tending to form clouds has reached a condition which in a way is a recapitulation of an earlier condition, the condition in a coarser form of the ancient sun stage. The element which tends toward contraction, which in a way repeats the densification to the stage of water of the ancient moon, is now further differentiated. And this further separation constitutes what comes to pass on the third day of creation. We can say that on the second day, the Elohim separated the air from the water, whereas on the third day, they separate within the element of water what we know today as water from something which had not existed before, a new densification, the solid element. The solid element is there for the first time. At the moon stage, this solid earthly element was not yet there. Now it is precipitated out of the watery element. Thus on the third day, in quotes, of creation, we have a process of condensation, and we have to say that whereas on the second day the Elohim separated the air element from that of water, on the third day, within the old moon substance, they separate the new water element from the earth element, which now emerges as something completely new. Everything which I have hitherto described had already existed before, even if in another form. The first thing which is entirely new is the earth element, solid matter, which now appears on the third day. This earth element, which has separated out from the water, is here for the first time. Not until now has the opportunity arisen for what was already there to show itself in renewed form. What are the first things which take on form? Those forms which had already arisen on the old sun, which we described as plants shooting up in the delicate airy element of the sun, and which had then reappeared on the old moon in the watery element, though of course there were still no plants in the sense of today. It is only on the third day that there is a recapitulation of this in the earth element itself. The plant realm is the first to be repeated in the earth element, and this is wonderfully described in the Bible. I will deal later with the question of how we should understand the days of creation. For the moment I am talking of the coming of the light and of the air and of the separating of the water from solid matter. The solid element now brings forth from out of itself a recapitulation of plant nature. This is very graphically described in the Bible, when it says that after the Elohim had separated the earth from the water, plant life springs forth out of the earth. Thus the springing up of plant life on the so-called third day is a recapitulation in the solid element of what already existed during the ancient sun stage, a kind of cosmic memory. In the cosmic thinking of the Elohim, there now arose in a solid condition the plant life which had existed on the old sun at the gaseous stage. Everything is repeated in a different form. Plant life is in a condition in which plants are still not individualized as on our earth today. I therefore expressly drew attention to the fact that separate individual plants, such as we can see and touch in the external sense world today, were not in existence either during the old sun stage or the old moon stage, or even at the earth stage when plant life is recapitulated in the earth element. What did exist were the group souls of the plants, what we today call the kinds of plants or species, and which to clairvoyant consciousness are not abstractions but something existing in the spirit realm. These manifested in the supersensible realm as a recapitulation. And that is what the Bible tells us. It is a strange thing, but biblical commentators hardly know what to make of the words, quote, "And the earth brought forth grass, and herb, yielding seed after his kind. Close quote. We ought to say, quote, in the form of species, close quote, for this is the explanation. Plant life existed in the form of group souls, species. There were no individual plants, such as there are today. You will misunderstand the whole description of the springing forth of plant life on the so-called third day of creation unless you think of this group soul nature. You must understand clearly that there was no springing forth of plants in the present sense. But the forms of the species or the group soul nature of the plants spring forth on a soul level from out of active cosmic thinking. So, when on the third day of creation we are told that the Elohim separated out from the water the solid element, the fourth elemental condition, we find that in this solid state, which of course in its original elemental form would not yet have been visible to the outer eye, EYE, but only to clairvoyant sight, there was a reappearance of the forms of the plant species. There can not yet be a recapitulation of animal nature. We have already pointed out that animal nature could only make its appearance during the ancient moon stage after a duality had come into being and the sun had begun to function from outside. Therefore, a repetition of this process, the separation of the moon, had to occur before evolution could advance from the plant to the animal level. So we are told that after the third day, in the periphery of the earth, an outer element of sun, moon, and stars begin to take effect, that forces begin to work in from outside. Whereas we previously envisaged an activity coming forth from the planet itself, now, in addition to this, there was activity raying in from heavenly spaces. In other words, the actual process should be described roughly in the following way. In addition to the forces of the terrestrial globe itself, which could recapitulate on its own only as much as it had previously brought forth as a unity, the Elohim, from out of their cosmic thinking, now brought forces into play which streamed down upon the planet from cosmic space. A cosmic dimension was added to the earthly dimension. For the present, let us read nothing further into what is described on the so-called fourth day of creation, what was brought about by this raying in of forces from outside. Those processes could now be repeated naturally, which already existed during the old moon stage, but only in an altered form. During the old moon evolution, those animals had come into being which could live in the elements of air and water. These could now begin to reappear. Therefore, Genesis tells us, in wonderful accord with the facts, how on the fifth day the air and the water began to teem with life. This is a recapitulation from out of the earth element of the old moon evolution, but at a higher level and in a new form. My dear friends, when we contemplate things such as this, our anthroposophical striving turns into a tremendous reverence for these ancient documents. What is experienced by clairvoyant consciousness is recorded in this document in impressive words, in words full of power. It confirms for us what clairvoyance has already told us, that once the light has started to shed its rays from outside, the creatures which existed in the elements of air and water at the old moon stage could reappear. In face of such a soul-stirring discovery, how can we attach any importance to intellectual criticisms of these things? What nonsense it makes of the argument that this document was written in primitive times, when human knowledge was still at a childish level. A fine childish level when we rediscover in these records the highest knowledge to which we can raise ourselves. Must we not ascribe to those who have given them to us the very spirituality which alone is able to reach to this revelation? Does not this document, bequeathed to us by those seers of old, bear witness to them? The contents of this document itself testify that its writers were inspired. Indeed, we need no historical proof, for the contents themselves are the only possible proof. When we look at things this way, we realize that it was only after the fifth day of creation that anything new could happen. For everything which had to be repeated had already done so. Now the earth itself, which had emerged as a new element, could be populated by animal life, and all the new forms arising from this. Therefore we find, described in splendid realism, how on the sixth day a new element appears whose existence is, so to speak, attached to the earth. The animals who are described as appearing in the world on the sixth day are the ones who are bound to the earth and who appear as a new element. So we see that until the fifth day we have a recapitulation of what had gone before, but now at a higher stage and in a new form. On the sixth day, however, earth nature comes into its own for the first time, and something is added which has only become possible because of earth conditions. I have now, so to speak, given you a summary of the sixth day of creation. I have shown you that the sages of old who brought their great wisdom of the 6 days of creation into this hidden form must have been fully aware of the new element arising. And further, they must also have been fully aware that it was only within this earth element that the actual being of man could break in. We know that all that the human being went through during the old Saturn, Sun, and Moon stages were preparatory stages for becoming man. We know that during the Saturn period, the first rudiments of a human physical body were developed. During the Sun period, the rudiments of an etheric or life body were added. And during the Moon period, the rudiments of an astral body. What was repeated up to the end of the so-called fifth day of creation contained an element of astrality. Everything which had being had astrality. To infuse the ego, the fourth member of human nature, into a being in this whole evolutionary complex was only possible when earth conditions had been fully created. So the Elohim prepared the earth by recapitulating the earlier stages at a higher level throughout the 5, in quotes, days of creation. It was only then, because the recapitulation had taken a new form, that they had at their disposal a fitting vessel into which they could impress the human form, and this was the crowning of the whole of evolution. If a mere recapitulation had followed, evolution as a whole would only have been able to advance to the animal stage, the astral level. But as, right from the beginning, with every repetition, an element was being poured in which finally revealed itself as the earth element, a vessel was finally arrived at, into which the Elohim could pour all that lived within them. I have already described what this was like. Like having a group of 7 people, each one of whom has learned something different. They all have different capacities, but all are working toward the same goal. There is one particular thing they all want to do, and each one contributes what he does best. This leads to an achievement in common. No single individual has the strength to do it on his own, but together they have the strength. What could we say about 7 people such as these, who create something in common? We could say that the product of their work bears the impress of the image they had made of their task. We must keep this in mind as an apt description of the way the 7 Elohim worked together to arrive, finally, at their crowning achievement, to pour human form into what could arise out of the repetition of earlier stages, because everything was given a new imprint. Suddenly, therefore, quite a new language is spoken in Genesis. Earlier on, things are expressed in particular terms, quote, the Elohim created, close quote, the Elohim spoke, close quote, and so on. We have the feeling we are dealing with something that was determined from the outset. Now, when the crowning of Earth evolution is to appear, a new language is spoken, quote, let us, close quote, and in the usual translation, quote, let us make man, close quote. This sounds as if the seven were taking counsel together, as people do when they are endeavoring to fulfill a common task. Therefore, in what finally emerges as the crowning of the work of evolution, we have to see a product of the combined effort of all the Elohim, that they all contribute, each as he is able, to this common task, and that the human etheric form ultimately appears as an expression of the capacities and strengths acquired by the Elohim during the ancient Saturn, Sun, and Moon stages. In saying this, we have indicated something of immense importance. We have, so to speak, touched on what can be called human dignity. In many an epoch of history, the impression made upon religious minds, the feelings they felt by certain words, brought their consciousness far nearer to the truth than is the case today. The ancient Hebrew sages also knew these feelings, and when they turned their attention to the seven Elohim, it came over them that despite all their humility and reverence, the human being is a tremendously important part of the world, if the differing activities of seven beings had to combine to bring him into existence. The human form on earth is a goal of the gods. When you feel the whole significance of these words, you will realize that each one of us has a tremendous responsibility, an obligation to make the human form as perfect as possible. The possibility of perfection was given from the moment the Elohim resolved to combine all their capacities for the achievement of the one goal. This is a divine heritage, and it has been entrusted to human beings to develop it to ever higher levels of perfection into far distant times. Our study of cosmic evolution in relation to the tremendous opening words of the Bible must, among other things, lead us in all humility and patience, but also with strength, to be feelingly aware of this goal. These words not only disclose our origin, but also point to our goal and highest ideal. We feel ourselves to be of divine origin, but we feel too what I tried to show in my Rosicrucian drama, at the point where the initiate reaches a certain stage and feels himself to be at the level of, quote, O man, experience thyself, close quote, he is well aware of his human weakness, but also of his divine goal. He will no longer pass away, no longer become dried up in soul, but he feels uplifted, feels he is being inwardly experienced when he experiences himself. When he is able to experience himself in his other self that is filled with something that is akin to his own soul, because it is his own divine goal. The end of Lecture 3.